Bendigo Business Stories podcast, produced by B Bendigo, acknowledges the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognises the continuing connection to lands, waters and community. We pay our respects to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures and to the elders past, present and emerging. Welcome to our Women in Business series as part of the Bendigo Business Stories podcast, proudly produced by B Bendigo and sponsored by McKern Steel. McKern Steel is a leading supplier of high-quality structural steel for residential projects across Victoria. Located across three venues in Bendigo, they are dedicated to keeping their business regionally based. McKern Steel are also an active player in the community through the McKern Foundation, which is focused on contributing to community projects that benefit the health and well-being of youth. This season is dedicated to celebrating women in our business community who are driving change, breaking barriers, and inspiring others with passion and determination. Join me, your host Kimberly Finesse, as we talk to local women about their career journey. We'll talk about the challenges they've faced, the lessons they've learned, and the success they've achieved along the way. This season is about something more than just sharing their individual stories. It's about recognising the invaluable contributions that women make to our community and our local economy every single day. It's about celebrating their resilience, their creativity, and their commitment to excellence. Now let me introduce you to our special guest. Hello, Alyssa. Welcome to season two of Women Driving Positive Change and the opportunity to talk about women in STEM.
Thank you so much for having me here today. I am so excited to talk about women in STEM. It's my favorite thing to talk about.
I bet it is. Before we get into it, it's probably best we actually explain the acronym STEM.
Yes, definitely. It's one of those words that get used all the time now. STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and maths, but it's much more than that. It's more than the sum of its parts. It's about learning critical thinking skills. It's about creativity. It's about collaboration. It's about being curious and resilient. It's about all these incredible skills that we need for the jobs of the future.
Absolutely. It has its own day, International Day of Women and Girls in STEM. What I love about those days is that there'll be a lot of statistics that come out. And I think it makes people just pause and realize, okay, this is why we have this day. This is sort of what we're trying to fix here and where we need to do better. Have you got some stats for me?
Oh, always.
I thought so.
Always. So 75% of the jobs of the future need STEM skills. And unfortunately, this gender equity report just came out end of last year, and only 27% of the STEM workforce is female. So that shows that there's all these incredible opportunities that women are missing out on. And it also means that there's all this knowledge locked away in these brilliant minds that isn't being tapped into.
Is there a reason why young girls don't follow through to a career in STEM? Like, is there a point somewhere in our education that it just drops off the radar?
There's lots of points. Unfortunately, they tend to call it the leaky pipeline. So the research shows that between the ages of 3 and 5, kids will already identify careers as being male or female. And in primary school, about the age of 8 to 11, girls will already start to say that I'm not smart enough for that. Or boys are good at maths, and it gets reinforced in little ways that people don't even realise. And so a lot of the effort is put into getting young women into STEM careers in university, but you have to start when they're infants. You have to start with the families and the community and all of that really, really early to break that cycle before it begins.
Amazing. I think we could probably talk about stats and all of this part for a little longer, but I actually want to go back to young Alyssa. Take me back there in terms of how you discovered this passion for STEM.
Well, it's funny. There's no one eureka moment for me. It's lots of little things along the way. So I remember having a teacher in primary school, and she wasn't even my teacher. She was a teacher of another class, Mrs. Stebbing. She was incredible, but everyone knew she was excited about science. So if you had a science question, you'd go to her, and she'd get so involved in it. Like, I remember finding an insect wing and I didn't know what it was, and I took it to her. So she reached out to her contacts at university and sent it away, and they wrote back a little thing for me saying, and I'm like, this is incredible. I was curious, And someone helped me follow that curiosity to the end. And I got to get a letter from someone at university. I didn't know people from university. I mean, teachers were the only people I sort of knew who'd been to university. And then, you know, you get that the teacher who's excited and gets you confident. And then I was in love with animals, absolutely loved animals. And so at 13, I went, I'm going to go volunteer at the veterinary practice. And I did. And they took me on, they let me in. And after 6 months, they gave me a job there. And I realized really quickly, I didn't want to be a vet.
Yep. It's good to realize that a little earlier than, you know, down, what is it, an 8-year course or something?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a long one, yes.
Loved the animals, but it is such an emotionally intense space because people love their animals so much, or in some cases don't love their animals enough. And that still made me realize that I loved the sciences behind it. I wanted to be in the back rooms. I wanted to be working with the animals. I wanted to be working with the people who were passionate about STEM. And then the sort of final spark for me was when I was in year 11. I was pretty good at public speaking. So someone recommended I apply for this summer course. It was sort of a leadership course with a bit of science in it. And I'm like, yeah, okay, I'll try that. Turns out it was actually a summer camp, and I went away for 2 weeks and was surrounded by people who love science. And it was incredible. These people that I'd never met before, people who had opportunities I'd never heard of before. I came from a small town, about 5,000 people. It was opened my eyes to what was out there. I'd never heard of engineering before. So getting to meet people who already knew that they wanted to go down these paths, I was like, yeah, that's exciting. That's really cool. And that's what made me decide, yeah, when I go to university, I want to do STEM.
You do have a bit of an eclectic career. I think, you know, you have been in Bendigo a long time. I've obviously seen you in the media and know a little bit of your background in terms of what you've done. Can you share with us some of the incredible roles that you've had before you've become the general manager of the Discovery Centre?
Yeah, sure. Yes, eclectic is a good word for it. When I went to university, I studied an undergraduate of science communication. And there's this master's degree you can do after that. That's the science circus. So you learn at university for part of the year, but for 4 months of the year, you're on the road with a semi-trailer truck full of science experiments and science exhibits. And you travel to remote and rural communities doing STEM workshops. So I got to go out to far northern Western Australia. I went to tiny remote towns. I went to Cooper Pedy in South Australia. I got to go to far north Queensland, up Mossman, above Cairns. So I got to go to these communities, and just the wonder and the awe and the excitement that you got to see on these kids' faces who've never had these opportunities before. And honestly, most of them believed what you were doing was magic rather than science. Like, we had to start a chant that was, what was that? And they'd go, magic. And we'd go, science. And they'd go, magic, science. And get them to realize that all these things they thought were magic were actually science. So that was incredible. And the problem with that was that it was only a one-year degree. I wanted to keep going. So luckily after that, I managed to find another job where I was able to continue to travel, because I love travel so much. And I was doing forensic science workshops in schools. So I got to travel around Australia, Ireland and the UK for 3.5 years doing forensic science shows. So I'd set up a crime scene in the school hall, and then the kids would filter in and they'd have to solve the crime. And we'd use all these incredible STEM experiments and skills to solve it. And I loved when you'd go to the school and you'd get these kids, and usually be the last class of the day, teachers would come in, they'd go, oh, we're really sorry, you get in the bad class. This is the lower ability class. Oh. And I'd go, no, these are the ones who are going to love it the most. These are the kids who've been told they're not smart enough. These are the kids who have not good at writing things down and memorizing things. But when you give them a puzzle to solve, they get so excited. And having these kids who, you know, oh, I can't do this. And then they get there and I go, okay, well, if you're going to guess, what would you guess? And they're like, oh, this. I'm like, why'd you guess that? And they're like, oh, because of this and this. And I'm like, you're right. And they'd be like, what? come over here, everyone, come look at this. And they'd start teaching everyone else. And it was absolutely fabulous to get them so excited about something that they thought they were too dumb to do. And not, they just haven't been given the right learning opportunities. So that was fabulous, getting to do that. But living out of a suitcase for 3.5 years got a little bit tiring. And so then I started looking for somewhere where I could sort of settle down and looking for a job where I could use science communication. And I discovered Discovery. So there were two jobs I was going for at the same time. One was Discovery. I got the interview on the same day as I got the interview for a job in Wellington Zoo. And both of those jobs were incredible. And I got the job offer for both of them on the exact same day. And it all boiled down to the people. The people at Discovery were so passionate and so enthusiastic and just shared these values of curiosity and STEM for all that I hold so dearly that I was like, well, I've got to go meet these people. I've got to go work with these people. And yeah, that's how I ended up here.
It's amazing. The fact that you went to uni to be in a circus, really. Or you go to uni and you can learn to be in a circus. Your own CSI sort of show happening, albeit in primary schools and in rural and remote communities, and then obviously to give up a zoo for Discovery, something that some people may not know. But it was opened 1995. It's Australia's first science and technology centre outside a major metropolitan area. Like, that's massive.
It's incredible. Like, the impact it's had on the community, I think people don't realise it some of the time, but the people who walk in and you go, oh, have you ever been here before? And they'll be like, I came here when I was a kid, and they're now bringing their kids. And that's so special to have them remember it and want to bring their kids back and sort of point out, oh, I did the slide. I did a sleepover when I was your age. Those sort of things. It's like, well, it's obviously making memories. Even if you don't end up in a STEM career, you've got that little bit of love, that little bit of passion, hopefully broken down a little bit of that fear.
Yeah. When we go back to you sort of being in those remote and rural communities, have you ever looked back and then thought, I wonder where some of those kids ended up? Do you think you had an influence in some of them following a STEM career later on in life, or maybe better understanding?
I would hope so. I mean, for me, it's not necessarily about getting them into the STEM careers as much as getting them excited about the opportunities that are available to them. I want everyone to believe they could do it if they wanted to. And I mean, you say, do I look back and wonder if any of them have ended up in STEM careers? I had a beautiful moment end of last year where we had a work experience student show up and I opened the front door and I'm like, you look very familiar. She's like, I did your girls in STEM program 5 years ago. And she's now studying science at high school, and she came in and spent 1 week with us. And our planetarium was fairly new to us and we didn't know the ins and outs of the system. She came in and learnt the system and made this incredible show about sustainability. And she was so passionate. And the fact that the very first thing she said when she walked in is that she'd done Girls in STEM all those years ago was so special. So I'm glad that it's, you know, it's stuck in there.
Absolutely. In terms of challenges and barriers, What do they look like for women working in this industry?
There's lots of challenges and barriers. I mean, you know, you got to see it to be it. If you don't have people that you can look to and try and emulate or work towards, but I mean, networks, right? It sucks to feel alone. And if you're working in an industry where you feel like the odd one out, or that your voice isn't heard, or that you're perspectives aren't respected and given weight, that's really hard. And that's part of that leaky pipeline we talked about earlier, is people who go into the STEM fields and then feel so alone and end up dropping out. And then there's also things like career breaks. So if you step out of the STEM field to have a family, or if you go part-time, there isn't much resilience in the industry for helping people get back in. I know they're trying to change that. I know they're advocating for it. But it is one of those things that if you have the networks and the leadership team and the people with the same experiences as you, then they're more likely to be flexible around those things and support people with those sorts of things. So, yeah, it's really about getting, you know, that support and that representation.
For yourself, Alyssa, have you had a mentor throughout your career that you've been able to check in with and ask those questions?
I wouldn't necessarily have had a single mentor throughout my career. I know I had a lecturer in uni who was absolutely awesome, and she would move heaven and earth to help her students if she could see they were trying. Lindy Author, she was incredible. She was doing her PhD, her doctorate on Doctor Who, which I thought was so much fun and so interesting. But also people, you know, on a larger scale. Have you ever heard of Jane Goodall?
Yes. Absolutely.
As a kid, I absolutely loved reading about her, and she has some incredible programs out there to inspire young people to get into STEM and to support them in it. And, you know, I was a massive reader as a kid, and reading all her books and all these wonderful things about her, that was a big inspiration for me as well.
Now, you mentioned that, you know, you do need to see what you can be, and it's about finding your people, finding people that are very similar to yourself where you feel, oh, I found my place, I've arrived. Now, for those that are interested in STEM, especially young girls, that can be really tricky for them to find that space. You're doing something incredible to be able to nurture and, I suppose, create like a little community for them. Tell me about the program.
Yeah, we have our fabulous Girls in STEM program at Discovery. We are so lucky. About 7 years ago, I think Zonta approached us. Zonta is a international group of women who support women and children, and our local branch reached out and said, hey, is there any way we could partner with Discovery on something? And that's how Girls in STEM was born. It's this program where we reach out to the schools and they nominate two girls in grade six who come to Discovery once a month, and it's from 15 different schools. So 30 students from across 15 different schools who all meet up and explore a different area of science every single month. And then at the end of the year, which is so exciting, they go back to their school and they actually run workshops for their school. So at the beginning of the year, we do surveys, we ask them about their confidence. Would you ever, you know, stand up in front of people and do teaching? And they're like, no, that's a bit scary. At the end of the year, they are so excited to go. I've got to say, during COVID, when we weren't able to go into schools, originally I used to go help them run the workshops. And I said, guys, I don't know if we're going to have to scrap this. You know, I can't come into schools. And they're like, no, we can do it ourselves. I'm like, are you sure you want to run a whole class, 30, maybe 60 kids by yourself? And they're like, no, we got this. And since then, I've never gone into the school to help with it again, because they can do it. They've got that confidence. They've done it enough, and they've all seen each other do it. And so they know that they're all able to, and it's awesome. It's so good.
Pretty incredible that you're giving them that opportunity, Alyssa, that you're probably their role model. Honestly, they're probably looking at you going, oh my God, there's this passionate person that is absolutely contagious. You're a vibe. I mean, it's hard. It actually isn't too hard to feel that through the audio, I'm sure. But, you know, that passion would then come through to them and they're like, well, hang on, it's okay to be like this. It's okay to like, you know, science, technology, electronics, mathematics. I've got someone to look up to that is in a very successful position as well as general manager. I mean, that's a whole part of a conversation we need to have today as well, in terms of being able to climb the corporate ladder. But you're this beautiful role model for them. What is the hope? Do you hope that then they go back into that classroom, they then inspire someone else in their peer group, and that hopefully follows on to high school, because that's where life changes.
Yes, definitely, definitely. Look, there's so many little facets of the program that I absolutely love. Zonta sponsors a membership for the families of the girls. So we know that the biggest influence on their decision-making when they're younger is their family and the community around them. And at Discovery, you know, people are so well-intentioned, but sometimes they say things. You hear someone say, oh, it's so good to have a space for boys, or, oh, girls, don't go near those insects, they're icky, or, oh, girls, you don't want to touch that slime, it's gross. And those little things that get embedded, and by getting a membership for the families, they come in with their kids and they may have never been to Discovery before, and the girls know the place inside out. And so they're running around telling their parents all these awesome facts and showing them, and their family are like, wow, they're really good at this. They're incredible at this. My daughter is a woman in STEM. Like, she already knows this. And then they're going back to their school, and this isn't something I orchestrated as part of the program. It's something that the students and the teachers have. But lots of the schools every month get the girls to do a little newspaper blurb or demonstrate something in class that they've learned. And they really become role models in their school. And the students come up and go, oh, I met such and such who was running the Girls in STEM workshop, or who taught us this experiment. And that gets this infiltration into the whole community. It really changes the perception of, you know, who does STEM, which, yeah, it's so awesome to get to see that.
I think you're changing the perception of who does STEM in terms of being a general manager, don't you think?
Look, STEM skills are perfect for management skills. There's so many of those skills, that resilience, that not being afraid of failure, which was a steep learning curve for me, but also the collaboration and the critical and creative thinking definitely comes into play. And I think one of the things that people don't think about very much with management, that is a skill that we do associate with women, is caring. And it's so crucial to managing people, and especially a place like Discovery. Like, we're all about the people. I say to my staff a lot when we're doing our training that this might be your everyday. You come in and do this every single day. But for that kid, it's their birthday. It's their first memory of science. It's the one time they get to do a sleepover. It's that impactful memory. Like, it's so awesome that we get to do that. And that level of care and that level of communication and listening is so key. And it's a big part of what we do.
What's your journey been like to be a general manager? What has that looked like in terms of each step you've taken? And when that role presented itself, were you eager to take it on? Or was there a little bit of, I'm not sure?
Well, I was a science communicator at Discovery for 3 years, and then COVID. And the general manager at the time, we didn't know if Discovery was going to survive. And they ended up taking another opportunity. And the board came to me and they said, can you just do this, you know, until this COVID thing blows over? Can you just step up into the management role for a few months? I'm like, oh, I don't know. And the rest of the team were awesome. They were like, look, give it a go. We'll support you. I'm like, but we're peers. It feels really strange to step into a management role when you've been working with these people as peers for so long. And they're like, just give it a go. You know, it's better than an unknown for now. And so, yeah, stepped up. And how many years has it been now? It's been a long time. It just got to the point where things were going well. We found opportunities. We made opportunities. We worked together. And we built a really strong team, and we're an incredibly strong team. We all have quirks, and we're all got really interesting different perspectives and backgrounds, but that all comes together really beautifully in our team.
In terms of it being an interim role and then being that role for you, have you worked on any aspects of, say, leadership, management, anything like that to help you in that role?
Yeah, I have done lots of management courses over the last few years. It's really, really great to do these courses and find out incredible ways of working with people and motivating people, you know, working out whether you need to be a trainer, a coach, a mentor, you know, when you need to be a sounding board, looking at if someone is in the right position for them is one of those really special ones that I've learned recently, that someone can be absolutely incredible, but you've got them in the wrong role. And working through what their goals are and what their skills are and where they want to develop is a really interesting process to go through with people. I've definitely found that really valuable. We are unique, I would say, because we're a not-for-profit charity. We're small, we've got volunteers, we've got lots and lots of part-time or casual staff. And when I go to these management training courses, there's lots of people from big corporations who have, you know, lots of hierarchy. And so you've sort of got to adapt what you're learning. And that's been really interesting to sort of play with it and test it and say to my team, look, I'm learning this. Give me feedback. Let me know what's working for you, what I'm doing right, what I'm doing wrong, how we can do this together.
Almost finding your own style, really. As you said, sort of looking at those other, I suppose, the bigger corporates and how they're set up and taking little bits, but still making it yours. And I suppose, in a way, not losing the essence of you either.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think there's, like you say, taking some parts and leaving others. There are parts that in these courses they may say, and I think, you know what, that's not us. That's not how we do things, and that's fine. But these parts are really, really valuable to us, and these will set us up just right.
I love it. Well, the Discovery have just had a major rebrand as of the 2nd of March. Obviously, you're at the helm with that. Tell me a little bit about that and why it was needed.
Yeah, well, Discovery is 28 years old. We'll be turning 29 this October. So Discovery's had the same logo for a little over 10 years. Now we've only ever had two logos, and they need a refresh every now and again. Our number one strategic priority is STEM for all, but the other one is Discovery Renewed, because we believe that, you know, rural and regional kids deserve the same opportunities, if not better, than their urban counterparts. So we need to keep things fresh. We need to keep new ideas and new opportunities coming to the regions. And what better way to signify that to everyone than to rebrand and refresh our look and keep up with the times and make it so that people are excited to come along. So this new rebrand is really, really fun and really exciting for us.
Yeah, and they're not a small project to roll out either. There's lots of moving little parts. Is that been your biggest project?
No, I probably wouldn't say it is. I think two other massive projects we've had over the years is during COVID, when everything was closed down, we switched to online. None of our team wanted to sit idle, and we started running online workshops for all our members and families. And we ended up getting like 120, 140 families logging online to join us for these online workshops. And they were completely free. We got a call from the Department of Education and Training and said, is there anything you can do to help our schools? And we said, yeah, this virtual thing's working really well. So we got a grant for 2 years to run online virtual workshops for small regional and remote schools. And we pack these kits of all things that you can find in the shop and the hardware. And every single week we get all these small schools joining us online and live. We do workshops at the exact same time as them. We're doing experiments together. And after 2 years, you know, people were going back to schools and the department said, it's going really well. Do you want to extend it? And we're still doing it now. So I just left and they had lots of kids. You could hear them all through the speakers joining in on the experiments and trying them out. So that one was really incredible and it's still going, which I'm so proud of. And then the other one is the new planetarium. So the community supported us so much. We managed to raise over $500,000 to be able to build a new planetarium for Discovery, and the wonders of the universe are inside that thing. There's over 30,000 images, audio files, videos from all over the world that we have access to that we're now able to share with the people who come to Discovery. And, you know, people think planetarium, they think space, but last school holidays we were diving in the Great Barrier Reef, and this school holidays we might be flying around the world. So there's lots of opportunities there.
Oh my God, it sounds so exciting.
It is.
For kids and adults, I think. Even I would like to, you know, experience the Great Barrier Reef right here in Bendigo and not have to travel anywhere. Sounds amazing. In terms of a career in STEM, what has it gifted you, both professionally and personally?
I think the incredible STEM skills of collaboration, of critical and creative thinking, I value them so much. But I think the number one thing is resilience, is learning to look at failures in a new light, is having a failure and looking at it as an opportunity to do something new, do something different, to solve a problem in a unique way. I think that's something that's really, really hard to accept. But once you do, it's really valuable.
Can you remember a time when that's happened?
There are so many little examples. I mean, the COVID example of being able to come up with a virtual program that's still going is the first one that springs to mind. But even just little things where I remember when I was doing the science circus and we're traveling out to a rural remote school that was, I think we drove for 3 hours through red dirt. We got to this community. There's no hotel or anything in the community. We were going to be sleeping on the school classroom floors that night. Like, that's where we're staying. And we got to the school and my science show was all about water, and the town had no water that day. And so on the fly, coming up with a new workshop, problem solving, getting the kids to help me, and it ended up being this incredible workshop that was all about what they were doing and where they were. And then at the end of it, I'm like, okay, guys, we need 15 minutes to set up for the next one. And they all disappeared. And I'm like, oh, no, they've gone. They didn't enjoy it. I'm like, I'm sure we were enjoying ourselves. Well, 15 minutes later, they came back with their families. They'd all run home to go get their parents and their older siblings. And they all came back. And the next workshop was even more collaborative. So something didn't go to plan, and we were able to problem solve by using the people around us, by collaborating, and really enjoyed it. So, yeah, there's lots of great ways that you can do it.
How do you operate under pressure? You're just so happy all the time. Like, how do you operate under pressure? You know, what happens when you're, under the pump and things aren't going right?
Oh, look, I can have a little grumble every now and again, but really, it's about making the best opportunity for the kids who are in front of us right there. So it's no use collapsing or crumbling or getting upset, because we just want to make sure they have the best time, that they have the best memory, and they don't know what's meant to happen. So if something goes wrong, they don't know unless you tell them. So you can usually work out something else that's really good fun, really exciting, really educational. And yeah, as long as they're enjoying themselves and they're learning a little something along the way, that's all that really matters.
It's amazing. To wrap us up, what would you tell your younger self?
I think, and I know this might be a little bit left of centre after our conversation, but travel. Travel is the best investment you can make in yourself. I think the problem solving and the organisation skills and the budgeting and the trust you have to have in yourself to make the right decision and to take care of yourself, it's the most valuable life skill. And yeah, I love travel. It's such an investment in your future.
That's a great note to self. I love it. Thank you so much for the work that you're doing with our young people in the community, and especially for girls in STEM. I think it's just so admirable, and looking for a role model. Sometimes that's all we need, just to see and hear what we can be. And of course, I mean, if you're a kid the last time you went to Discovery, return back there as an adult and have a look at the planetarium. Sounds amazing.
Yeah, reconnect with your curiosity, because we've all got it.
Love it. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, please let us know by leaving a review via our socials or connecting with us online at bbendigo.com.au.